Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, May 25th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or in the archives. As we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered in my many years of doing therapy, these tools are gratefully available absolutely free at the website, whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 16 years to improve my life, from relationships, manage my emotions, and turn any negative emotion I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us has been gifted with. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself absolutely free. It's a PDF file. Click and download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains that worksheet process, an abbreviated version of that worksheet, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And you can download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or they've been calling in to ask clarifying questions or give testimonials about how the actual application of that tool in their lives has led to tremendous positive benefits. And if you do that, we hope you do, soon and often, you can give us a call. Our call number is 563-999-3581. And when you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number. And I'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. We are doing the Course in Miracles lessons this year, going through the workbook lessons. And today is the 145th day of the year, and the workbook lessons are a review. We start with the thought, my mind holds only what I think with the Creator. And the two follow-up review lessons are lesson 129 and 130. 129 reads, beyond this world, there is a world I want. And it is impossible to see two worlds. And the point being, as long as I focus on the world I see and there's any kind of upset in me, any kind of tension or negative emotion, I know I'm not seeing the actuality of what the Creator created, and I block myself from seeing the world I want. So those are the two lessons for today. And Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment book, lesson 145, is titled, Whittling Down the Vast Interconnected Mystery. She quotes Glenda Green as saying, behold infinity, and all that you see shall be given to you. Pam writes, only love is real. underneath it all, there's eternity. It's either heads or tails. You can't have both. The Course gives me the following criteria for deciding what's real. Number one, will it last forever? If not, it's a perceptual problem. What fades and dies was never really there and has nothing to offer. Number two, does it involve loss of any kind to you or someone else? Again, if so, it's a perceptual problem. Anything you take from someone else or perceive that they can take from you is an illusion. Number three, what purpose does it serve? If it's related to bodily concerns, it has a price tag, it has eminence as valued by the world, then it's a perceptual problem. Number four, does it invoke guilt of any kind? Again, nothing but a perceptual problem. So that's our Course in Miracles review lessons and the Course in Miracles experiment summary from the 145th day. And we have plenty of time. We have 53 minutes. We have the call-in number of 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? What would be of use to you to discuss or question? We have been reviewing the Course in Miracles experiment lessons and the Course in Miracles lessons and the essence of the past few lessons is to help us question what is it that our mind is showing us. And as we get ready to go into this review, we're reminded that my mind, in truth, the one mind that's connected, holds only what I think with all of creation, what is contained in truth, only the truth. So forgiveness is the key to happiness, and forgiveness offers everything I want. I thank the Creator for the gifts that I have. Let me remember that I am one with the Creator. In quiet, I receive the Creator's word today, and all that I give is given unto myself, since we're not separated. There is no love but loves. There is no love but the Creator. And the world I see holds nothing I want. However, there is a world beyond the world I see, and it holds everything I could ever want. And as long as I keep focusing on the world my eyes show me, I will not be able to see the world of truth and the world that offers everything I could ever possibly want. So, we have, being a Tuesday, we have the reminder that today is a day where we have the offering of the Mind Shifters support groups, and every Tuesday and Thursday, or almost every Tuesday and Thursday from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central, I offer, now because of coronavirus restrictions, I offer both of them through the Internet. It used to be just the Thursday group was offered through the Internet. And we are offering that free. So if you want to attend or you know somebody that would benefit from attending, you can get all the information you need to attend that group at mindshiftersacademy.org. And I need to remind people that there are two separate pages there for login information, that once a login set for Tuesday and once a login set for Thursday. We've had some people in the past who tried to log in with the wrong day's information, and it doesn't work so well. So, how can we support you? What is it about this work or about situations in your life that might benefit from us questioning them together? I should also mention that for the past year, a little over a year now, I've been donating my time to the Journey's Dream not-for-profit. And that not-for-profit is trying to help rewrite the narrative on mental health and provide a center for or a clearinghouse for information about non-allopathic or holistic or functional or integrative approaches to mental health issues. And so we've been endeavoring to do one interview per week. I think we've done 56 interviews so far in just over a year. And the interview that got released today was one of the founders of Journey's Dream, Mitzi Montague Bauer, and she was interviewing me. And they said they wanted to have the listeners get to know the host some more. So if you go to journeysdream.org/podcast, you can listen to an interview and find out a little bit more about me. And there's the potential that that'll be used as one of our best of shows later on when I need a break or when I have to, one of my other commitments keeps me from being here at 11 o'clock on a weekday. But you don't have to wait for that. You can go to journeysdream.org/podcast and access that, or wherever you get your podcast. The On Your Mind podcast, hosted by Journey's Dream, has just a wealth of information. We've been interviewing various people for the past year who do integrative psychiatry, people who have authored books that relate to mental health issues and emotional health, people who have been through their own mental health struggles, other people who've had their mental health struggles and gone on for a doctorate and turned it into a helping mechanism for people. We've interviewed people who have written a book on law enforcement and mental health for law enforcement. We've interviewed people like Dr. Peter Bregan, who has written a lot of books about how medications are not an answer to mental health problems. And so we've interviewed people who host treatment facilities that are geared towards helping people resolve their mental health issues either without medication or with as little medication as possible. One or more of those was a residential treatment facility. One of them is in Vermont, and one of them is in Arizona, in Sedona, the Alternative to Med Center. And my memory isn't serving up too many more of them, but there are, I believe, 56 episodes that have been published, and those are available for you to listen to and get in touch with anybody that we've talked about that is of interest to you. And so whether you listen to it or you forward it to somebody that you think might benefit, the On Your Mind podcast as a project is becoming a very useful resource for people who might be experiencing mental health challenges and want to do something other than the modern approach of let's just give you some medications to get rid of the current symptoms without looking at the underlying cause. So if you have any questions or comments about that or anything we've talked about in the last 10 years here in the Mind Shifters radio show, we're available for discussion. 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How can we support you today? What would be of value for you, for us to discuss? I hoping to do two more interviews this week. And I believe I've talked a little bit about Diedrich Wolzak. He was scheduled to be interviewed yesterday, but had a conflict, so hopefully I'll be able to interview him tomorrow. And he has a very, very similar system. He's also, just like Dr. Michael Rice, who presents the tools and developed the tools that are available at whyagain.org, Diedrich Wolzak has a very strong base in A Course in Miracles and the understanding of our true nature as the energy of creation, energy of love, and that most of the mental, emotional, psychological problems that we create are being created because we have forgotten or have never been exposed to the truth of our true nature as the extension of love in form, or the extension of the creative energy in form. And because at one level or another we had some kind of a trauma, and as a result of that trauma, we came to believe that we were damaged or broken or unlovable in some way. And one of the best ways to move forward in our lives is to uncover and then dismantle the negative beliefs about ourselves. And the parallels are striking. There's I believe that Diedrich lives in Vancouver, British Columbia, but he also has an intensive center in Costa Rica. Dr. Michael Rice has an intensive center in very southern Missouri, almost Arkansas. And he and Jeannie were exploring the possibility of creating an intensive center in Costa Rica. And based on what I've been reading and studying, the similarities between their intensive programs are amazing, right down to the fact that they do a lot of group processing, each of them, and they each work with a breathing technique to supplement the worksheet processes that they have. So the more I learn about these things, the more I see various people like Byron Katie and Dr. Hugh Len with Ho'oponopono and the Sedona Release Method, whether it's Hale Dwoskin or somebody else presenting that, Dr. Michael Rice with the Why Again, Why Is This Happening to Me Again book and the host of tools that he's created from that, Diedrich Wolzak and the way he talks about the very same stuff. Key phrases come up over and over again. If you think you're just a body, you're missing the vast majority of who and what you are. When you believe your thoughts, you suffer. When you move into acceptance of the truth of your nature and what's happening in the world, your life gets better rather than worse. As you work in denial, as you create a belief that someone or something outside of you is causing and or maintaining your emotions, that's denial, you create more pain and problems in your life. So it's an inside job. All of my upset is an inside job. When I create that upset and then I look outside of me for a solution, I guarantee frustration and failure. I guarantee I will never solve my internal problems by searching outside of me for a solution. So I, for one, am feeling, you know, excited and heartened by the fact that the number of people who are deeply studying what it is that causes our mental emotional problems and what the solutions are, who are coming to the same fundamental conclusions, is growing. And every time I discover another one with just a slightly different way of talking about it or approaching the inquiry into how am I creating my pain every time I find another person that does that, I get excited. I think, you know what, we're getting closer to what Michael Rice would call the physics of critical mass, where that pretty soon there will be a global awakening of consciousness. And I don't think there's any rush in that. I talk at times in the support group about how when people say, you better hurry up, you better wake up, I don't think there's any rush. I just think each of us, in our own way, when we're ready, that does their own individual work, contributes to this global awakening. And it'll happen in just the right time. It'll happen when it needs to happen. And it may or may not happen before what we might consider is global devastation. But it's okay, because the waking up that we're talking about, that people say in order to save the world, people are talking about the physical world. And yet the waking up they're talking about is of the non-physical, is of the consciousness, of the spiritual. So I encourage people to take a breath and soften and do their internal work, be gentle with themselves when they're having a negative emotion, and to whatever degree they feel called to do so, apply the tools. And apply the tools gently, and apply them with patience, and apply them with the consistency that you can muster at the time. And as soon as you catch yourself beating yourself up or thinking you're bad or wrong or it's stupid that you're not doing it better or faster, just take a breath and notice that's the same old unproductive thought process that's giving rise to all of your mental and emotional pain to begin with. So it doesn't make any sense to keep doing what's causing me pain. And when I wake up and realize that, my healing, my ease, my awareness of the truth of my perfect safety can rise to the surface, can rise to the conscious level. And I can't force myself to quiet my mind, because the I that wants to quiet my mind is a part of the very thing that I want to get rid of or I want to stop. However, it is possible for me to witness that the efforts I make, something accomplished in that arena, are counterproductive. As Guy Finley says it in one of his talks, the mind finally awakens when it realizes, it finally stops all of its working, when it finally realizes that it is the source of its pain, not the solution to its pain. So my mental emotional processes are going to continue and get strengthened the longer my mind believes that it can fix its pain. And the only way it's ever going to slow down or calm down is when my mind itself finally wakes up and realizes that it is the source of my mental emotional pain, not the solution to it. So I don't control my mind. I don't stop my thoughts. I don't force it to be quiet. I recognize, if I do this kind of work, that underneath the monkey mind chatter and the racing thoughts and the obsession, underneath all of that, there is that which doesn't change, that which is calm, that which awaits, as some would say, awaits your discovery and is closer to you than your own breath. So we're here to support people in removing any false belief about themselves, any negative pattern of thought that leads to physical, mental, and emotional upset, and we present these tools. These tools are the Reality Management Worksheet, 3 Early Memories of Conflict, the Mind Shifter Targeted Journaling Tool, the Getting the Stress You Need Tool, which has me, it's called the Mind Goal Management Sheet, which has me take control of, take responsibility for, the goals that I create and making certain or helping me, you know, have this tool to frame a goal before I set it, to make sure that it's in alignment with my values and priorities, with my relationships, that I'm going to enjoy the physical results of pursuing that goal and accomplishing it, or the relationship impact of accomplishing a goal. I can frame that out in a calm, quiet moment before I choose to set it. And then I can ask to be shown before I go to bed at night, ask to be shown how to have a peaceful night's sleep and how to evaluate the goals I've framed. I haven't set any goals, and I cancel any unachieved goals. So it takes my mind and even my unconscious mind somewhat offline when I cancel any unachieved goals. And then the next morning when I get up, I can review, okay, now I framed these goals out. Do I really want to set them? Am I really going to be as satisfied with the expenditure of time, intelligence, money, and energy that it's going to take to accomplish this goal? And do I want to set that goal for the day? And when I set that goal, the next thing I can do with my conscious awareness is select it for attention and maintaining attention on that goal throughout the day so that I can do the steps necessary to bring it to fruition. And then I can accomplish the goal if it gets accomplished, and I can also cancel the goal. And I would cancel it when I realize that I'm not going to be able to accomplish it within that next waking period, or I would consciously cancel it if I live into the realization that it isn't going to provide what I wanted and I don't really want to spend the time, intelligence, money, and energy that it would take to accomplish that goal. And rather than just trying to ignore it, realizing that there's this mechanism of mind that says, if I have set a goal, it continues to run in my mind, consciously or unconsciously, until one of two things have happened. It's either achieved or it's been consciously canceled. And since I understand that if it's any goals that are running in my unconscious that haven't been accomplished are a drain on my mental, emotional resources, then I can start to free up a lot of those resources by consciously canceling the goal. This is something that my culture has never taught me, but because my culture simply teaches me to set and achieve goals. Set them and achieve them. Set them and achieve them. Go, go, go. Achieve your goals. However, the benefits of freed up resources and calm and peace of mind that come from actively canceling goals, I don't think it can be overstated. It's been a tremendously powerful, positive benefit in my life to learn that set of tools and the power of freeing up my mental, emotional resources that comes from canceling unachieved goals. The good news is I get to choose the goals I set. So if I cancel a goal and then a day or two later I say, you know what, I think things have changed slightly, my energy is better, some other things have come into my awareness, I think I want to reset that goal. Yeah, the goal I canceled, you know, just a day or two before, I'm free to do that. Moment to moment, day to day, week to week, I can choose the goals I set and the time, intelligence, money, and energy that I spend on trying to achieve those goals. And as I manage those resources, those mental and emotional resources, I'm managing my own stress, and that's the reason Dr. Rice's lecture on that topic is titled Getting the Stress You Need. Because we need stresses to get anything accomplished. And yet, stress that I create focusing on things that I'm, you know, unable to accomplish in the next waking period, and or stresses that are generated because there's an unconscious goal running in my mind-body-energy system. So I'm not even aware of how much of my resources are being drained and contributing to a sense of feeling helpless and hopeless and overwhelmed. When I become aware of that process, I can start to manage it consciously. Man, it's just such a powerfully beneficial tool. I highly recommend it. And again, that's a worksheet that's available on whyagain.org. If you click on the red and white bullseye, you're on that next page. Just scroll down beyond all of the things we talk about in the intro of every show. Lower down on that page are a list of worksheets, and one of them is called the Mind Goal Management Worksheet, and that's the one I've been referring to just recently. And it's available free as a download. If you want more of an explanation about it, you can buy Dr. Rice's video, Getting the Stress You Need, and there's a, I think it's about a two-hour video that explains that process and how to use that worksheet. And it's one of the more powerfully beneficial tools, probably next in line to the reality management worksheet itself. And for me, it's kind of a close, kind of a tie for second between the three early memories of conflict and the Getting the Stress You Need lecture and the Mind Goal Management Worksheet. Because these two things together help me recognize what I'm doing with my mental emotional energy that is either contributing to my frustration or helping me accomplish goals that are of value to me. So that's just two other tools that we haven't mentioned in a while. I thought since nobody had a hand up, I would talk a little bit about those. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and we have 27 minutes left. What would serve you as a topic, or what's a question you have? 563-999-3581. I was mentioning earlier that before we had as many people on the switchboard, that the podcast, Journey's Dream podcast, was published today that contains the interview one of the founders of Journey's Dream interviewed me. So if you want to find a little bit more about me personally and me and my professional life, that interview is available at journeysdream.org/podcast. And as I say that, I remember, you know, I haven't said this in a while. We have an open invitation for any listeners, whether you're listening through the archives or listening live, to send in recommendations about books you'd like to have me read and or interview the authors or spiritual teachers that have had a profound impact on you that you think might be a good interview either for the Mind Shifters radio show that we're listening to now or the Journey's Dream On Your Mind podcast. If you have those suggestions and you're listening in the archives, you can send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can give Jeannie, send her an email at jeanie@whyagain.org. Alternatively, you can do what Ellen just did and call 563-999-3581 and press 1. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Hey, I just thought of someone that you might be able to interview. I think I know she's written at least one book. I think maybe more than one book. Her name is Gail Brenner, B-R-E-N-N-E-R. And I started, I don't even know how I ever found, I haven't read any of her books, but somehow I got on her email list, and she sends out an email every Friday, and I've been finding them very, very helpful. And she's also, I think, now doing some live Zoom meetings, which I haven't participated in any of those yet, but just from reading her emails, I think she would be a really good person for you to interview. So have you ever heard of her?
No, I'm typing it in now. Gail Brenner in books. And clinical psychologist, author, and speaker who helps people desperately wanting to be happy. Does that sound like the right person?
Certainly does. And she isn't like, you know, so well known that, she, you know, may, you know, a lot of those people like that are so well known or wouldn't be available for an interview. She might be someone who would be looking to, you know, get some more press or whatever you want to call it, you know, some more people finding out about her. I think she definitely has helped me in just the emails that she sends out.
Okay, well, she's got a book titled Suffering is Optional, A Spiritual Guide to Freedom and Self-Judgment, Freedom from Self-Judgment and Feelings of Inadequacy.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll take a look. I will dig in a little bit and see if... She also has a book called The End of Self-Help.
Yes, that's her first book. I love that because it's welcome to you, like your scary, messy, something brilliant life, or isn't that like the subtitle to that one?
It's The End of Self-Help, Discovering Peace and Happiness Right at the Heart of Your Messy, Scary, Brilliant Life. Yeah.
Right, yeah. I gave that book to someone who just, I just felt like, wow, she, I think she could really use this book, but I never read it myself, which is, I usually don't do that, but I just felt called to give it to her. Because I think she might appeal to people that maybe aren't quite as open or as far along the path. She puts things in very simple, easy to understand ways, you know, practical ways, which is great for all of us.
All right, I will look into that and see if I can't. All right, I found the website, so I can check into her, and I appreciate it. I'll let you know how that develops.
Okay, you're welcome.
So also, what else is happening in your young life?
I just wanted to mention, too, something that you said earlier today, which I found so helpful, and I know I've heard this before somewhere, but, you know, had forgotten it, and hearing you say it today was like, oh, yeah. when you said about when the mind realizes that it is not the
solution,
the one that
but,
helping,
yeah.
Right. It's the one that causes all the so-called problems, all the suffering, that's when the mind awakens. When it really
and it quiets down.
Well, right, it just stops, right? I mean, how could you not when you're like, just if you realize, wow, look, you do something all the time, and all of a sudden you realize, wow, me doing that I didn't realize the consequence of that. And once I see it, then you stop. So it makes perfect sense that, yes, the mind would just stop and that would be it, you know? I mean, so, yeah, thank you for saying that because that was very helpful for me to hear that.
Yeah, that's the succinct quote from Guy Finley. I might have amended it a little, but that's the essence of his teaching, is that you're not going to make your mind be quiet. The mind stops its incessant chatter and trying to convince you and it and everybody else that it's right only once it wakes up and realizes it's the thing that is the source of your pain and suffering, not the solution to it.
Right.
And that's right in line with something that was, you know, being talked about in the Course in Miracles Made Easy that I was listening to today and yesterday, and the Adyashanti book that I'm listening to. It's the very same thing. They're coming to the realization that all these different people who've gone into spiritual teaching and meditation, and they're trying to make their mind quiet down, control their mind, and it doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is because the part of me that wants to stop, part that's doing all the talking. So the part of me that wants to control my mind and quiet it down is the part that thinks it needs to be in charge to make it quiet down. Well, I can't, you know, stop the flood by pouring more water into it, right? It's not going to happen.
Right. It's like the ego trying to be the one that wakes up, the one that's trying to seek enlightenment. You know, it's the part that's preventing you from waking up. But yet the whole search is really undertaken by the ego, isn't it? I mean, what else could it be? Because you're already enlightened, who you really are.
Yeah, and the ego is the only part of me that suffers anyway.
Right, exactly.
And it doesn't realize that it's only suffering because it thinks it has to run the show. And it's trying to run a show that it's not equipped to run.
Yeah. Yeah. And what relief to find, you know, that's a hard job to run the show. So it's a big relief when you realize that not only do you not have to run it, but that you really, it's an illusion that you are. But, you know.
Yeah,
it
wasn't your job in the first place.
Right.
Right. You just came to the false belief because of the way you were trained by the family and culture that that was your job. So it is, you know, it's like being able to retire in a sense, and the relief of that, knowing, you know, everything's going to be taken care of. I've saved enough money for now and I don't have to work every day. And it doesn't mean I don't do anything. You know, if I'm a healthy person and I'm retired, it's not like I sit on the couch all day and eat and drink to morbid obesity, but I can do what I do with comfort and ease, knowing that the big picture is taken care of. And that's like what happens
right
when the ego wakes up and realizes, oh, wait, it's not my job to run this show. I'm supposed to be a passenger in this bus. And, you know, let's say if it gets a flat tire, get out and help change the tire. But I don't need to navigate. I don't need to pick the destination. The ego can just relax. And it does when it starts to realize that its pain is coming from its own effort.
Yeah.
But not until.
Yeah, that reminds me of a dream I had once where I was driving a car, but somehow I think I had a blindfold on or something, or there was some reason why I couldn't see. And here I was driving, and I was terrified because I couldn't see. And then I just got the message so loud and clear. Don't worry, relax. You're not in the driver's seat. And I was like, oh, remember waking up from that dream and feeling so relieved. I don't have to worry about crashing and killing myself. I'm not even the one that's driving.
Yeah, and that reminds me of something that I just ran across. I'm trying to find it here. I had highlighted it in one of the books I was reading, and it says it's a Ramana Maharishi who said, "A dreamer dreams that all the characters in his dream must wake up before he can."
Huh.
Think about that. The dreamer dreams that all the characters in this dream must wake up before I can wake up.
Well, that's like, well, yeah, well, the way I guess I look at it is that it's my dream self that's trying to wake up, and you know, which is obviously impossible because it's the dream self is not the one that's sleeping.
Well, this is more in line with when I think my husband or wife has to change in order for me to be happy, right? If I think I'm only frustrated because my business partner, you know, signed a contract without asking me first, or when I think people and things outside of me are responsible for my upset, I'm in a dream. I'm in that, what Michael Rice would call, being in denial or being in a codependent
mm-hmm.
relationship. And,
yeah.
And the Course wants us to understand we're responsible. The only place to seek healing is within, and the only time to do that is now. Right? There's no time in the future. Guy Finley says this over and over. There's no time in the future when you're going to awake.
Right.
And you're going to awaken to your true nature.
Right. And I've
it's
heard...
Now or
I've
it's never.
Right. And I've heard, I don't know if you're familiar with Jack O'Keefe. She's another awakened person. And she likes to say, right now, this is right here, this is as good as it gets. Don't like be looking for something to get better. This is it right here, right now. Like it can't get any better than right here, right now. Because that's what people are always doing, seeking something outside of this moment. And I know Leonard Jacobson put it in a way that I thought was really good. He said, until, you know, you can fully deepen into the present moment and experience the truth of the moment, you know, the heaven that it really is, it's going to feel like really ordinary and really boring. And so what happens is the mind is so much more enticing, because with the mind, you can think about wonderful memories from the past, or you can anticipate the future. And so there's this luring that the mind does, you know, it says, well, come into me and we'll go on all these journeys that are total fantasy, of course, and take you out of the present moment, because the present moment seems really boring compared to where you can go in your mind. But so that's where you need to come into this. No, I know that only the truth only exists in this present moment. So I am going to stay here, no matter how boring it may seem at first, because I know eventually I'm going to be able to deepen into it and discover that world beyond this world that I really do want. It isn't somewhere else. It's always right here, but I have to be willing to stay right here.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing you bring up is the concept of boredom.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, like what kind of a craziness is it to be alive on the planet in any given moment and then assume it's boring? What could be bored in me? It's got to be that thought process. It's got to be the ego, right? It isn't my true self that's bored ever, because my true self is the extension of the creative energy and form. There is an endless array of things to enjoy. It's that, you know, peace beyond all understanding. That means I have peace not for a reason. Happiness beyond all understanding, happiness for no reason. Great teachers for thousands of years have said, if you're happy for a reason, I feel sorry for you. Why?
Yeah.
Because as soon as the reason changes, you're going to lose your happiness.
Exactly.
And so the essence of being able to be aware, awake and aware in the moment of your true nature, and there you are staring at magnificence beyond the most beautiful sunrise or sunset that you've ever encountered, and you're staring at it in yourself. You're having an experience of it that goes beyond words each new present moment. That's your true nature. How is it possible? It's impossible to be bored with that. That's
right.
the flow of life expressing through you in this moment. To say I'm bored with it is to say I'm not paying attention to it. I'm not seeing
right.
it for what it is.
Yeah, and that's a big one for me. My ego is always insisting that if I just sit still and do nothing, that it is boring as hell. And I just have to, you know, keep saying it's not true. I'm not going to listen to that because I don't believe it. But that's one of my key challenges.
Well, and then what happens when I go to find something to appease me when I have decided I'm bored? What happens is I'm in that wild goose chase again. And whatever I find is only, always, and forever going to be a very temporary solution. And as soon as it changes again, I'm back into it. I'm chasing, you know, it's like the dogs at the dog race park that are chasing the rabbit on the end of the stick that's always running just out their reach. There's no way for me to have satisfaction or gratification because I'm looking outside of myself for what is, you know, the St. Francis of Assisi. When you go out there looking for God or light or enlightenment, what you're looking for is the very energy that's doing the looking.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Dr. Michael Rice will say, you know, do a love exchange in the mirror and understand that that's this energy of creation expressing in form is your true nature. This is the essence of everything you might ever want. And it's here staring in a mirror. It's here, it's the energy beating your heart and digesting your food.
Such good news.
Yeah, it's like the statement about, you know, you're like the person who's got the most precious jewel in the world, and you put it in a pocket, and you forget that you put it in your pocket, and you wake up one day and you say, wait a minute, where's my jewel? And you go looking everywhere except your own pockets for that jewel.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, you know, the dream of separation. That's being in the dream and chasing this imaginary solution.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope that we can wake up from that. And one of the ways to wake up from that is to start observing as consistently as possible every time we are in any kind of a tension or an upset, and recognizing how many times in our tension or upset have we searched outside of ourselves for the solution? And how many times has that led to a lasting resolution? And once we wake up and realize it's happened an infinite number of times and it has never led to a lasting solution, then we're free to quit doing it. Right? Then we're like the mind who has awakened and realized it's the one that is the source of its pain, not the solution to its pain. And then whatever it is doing, has been doing, ceases. And in that moment, if I can breathe into that and just be and observe, I start to see possibilities I've never seen before. And these are possibilities that don't have words. Oh, what is that possibility, Dr. Tim? What's going to happen when that? I don't know. Because it's beyond language. And it's beyond my experience. One of the favorite quotes from one of our support group attendees from Guy Finley is, you know, the new can't be known. If you go out looking for something and you think you're going to find what's new, you're never going to find it. Because you're looking for something based on what you've experienced in the past. And by comparing things you've known in the past to your present moment. So you're not going to find the new, because the new isn't something that you have had access to before. It can't be known. And as soon as you have an experience and you know it, it's not new anymore. So the miracle happens by learning to live in the question, in the moment, as Rilke would call us to, and understanding that my mind that wants to analyze these things and put words on it and be able to share it with others is incapable of knowing newness, because it instantly grabs a hold of it and wants to shrink it down into something that's familiar to it based on its past, and then put words on it and then try to express it to others. And that's pulling me out of the experiencing in the moment. So what's suggested by Rilke and other spiritual teachers is that we cultivate over time the ability to live in the question without demanding an answer that can be, you know, crunched down into what the 9-bit mind might be able to put words on and then compare to others and brag to others about how it's got the truth, etc.
Yeah, so, that reminds me of... Oh, I'm sorry. Is it time to go?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I
it reminds you
say,
of what?
Of Byron Katie talking about how she had to start kind of like living in the deception just in order to communicate with people. Because, you know, when she first woke up, she couldn't, you know, call herself Katie or, you know, live in this world that most of us are living in, and calling objects names. But she said that she realized with time that if she wanted to communicate with anyone, that she was going to have to start using, like, she couldn't use the word I, because she's like, there is no I. But she had to start doing that just in order to communicate with people. But she knows it's not true. So she's learned how to live in it without identifying with it.
Yeah. Yeah, and Michael likes to quote one of the lines from The Course in Miracles that talks about, once you wake up to that, you come back into what's not true.
Mm-hmm.
But just for the purposes of bringing some of what you've learned to those minds that haven't experienced it yet. You're not coming
right
back into what's not true and pretending it's true. You're
right.
Just, it's a temporary, you know, function you can serve. All right. Well, thank you again for calling. It's lovely to hear from you. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, May the 25th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. Give Michael just a minute to get dialed in, and we're getting really close to launching the new Why Again. So been working on that with Susan. Appreciate Susan Giles' expertise in switching this over, and got a few more things to do, but it's soon to be going live. It will be the same on the new site as it is the old site. You can click the Start Here button in the upper left corner, or scroll down and click the bullseye in the middle of the page. Both of those will take you to the same place. And that's where you will find worksheets for every workshop. You'll find chapter 24 of Michael's book. There's MP3s of different radio shows where we've walked people through doing the worksheet. Just lots and lots of information out there. Put the tools to work in your life and see the change. So if you are on the switchboard, press 1. You're first in line without waiting. And chat room's quiet today, but we welcome your comments and your questions. We're here to support you. When you put the tools to work and you run into something you don't understand or something you disagree with or just need extra clarifying, then that's what this show's about. We're here to support you in your work. And welcome, Michael. If you're talking, we can't hear you.
I have not yet said a word, but I'm here. Hey, sweetie. Thank you for opening the show, and thank you to everyone who's here, lending a listening ear, extending the understanding and the energetic signature of some very significant tools that sadly were disappeared, not even sure exactly when, 1,000-plus years ago. And our work is that of especially, I mean, there's a whole broad spectrum of tools and things available here, but the key core issue is that of restoring the first century understanding of the word forgiveness. Now, it's interesting to go back to the Aramaic, and they understood that language, voice box, set in motion frequencies that organized our physiology, and that our language is part of what creates our experience, and then as our experience is a reflection of language, that our language becomes a reflection of experience and understanding. And when our language goes off base, our understanding goes off base. Go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago in the Aramaic language, and he says that the power of life and death is in your words. And when you realize the organizing power of that little voice box you've got, it's pretty amazing. And what comes out of our mouths are reflections of the perceptual constructs that we've been taught to accept as true, or the eons. And of course, those words were sourced that many of us are speaking today many, many, many generations ago. You look at the story of the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. And when you think about it just for a half a minute, you know that people who understood astronomy as well as the Jews did, we're not lost in a 35-square-mile area for 40 years. That's just, like, it's ludicrous. It doesn't make any sense. But when you realize that the word desert means unconscious, and a lot of our unconscious programming has come from generation after generation after generation. And so to begin to change the structures of our minds so that our language changes and comes more into harmony with the truth of what we're capable of rather than the fact of what we've created. And that's where this work goes. That's where we're heading with this. And realizing that the word forgive in the first century Aramaic context meant removal. It had nothing to do with letting somebody else off the hook because a particular condition had left your mind and you were stuck in a condition other than the one you would prefer. Now, it seems logical to me that the preferred condition of the human mind would be that of love. And somebody else would be really, really, really off base to prefer something other than that when you realize that that's what the human organism was made of and made for. And so we're speaking with a character named Richard in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For those that are reading along with us in the book, we're on chapter 12, the last page, page 72. And we're talking about holding the space of love, about moving back to the space where we're restored to the truth of who we are. And so we've been having this conversation with Richard about stepping into the space of cultivating a relationship with love, taking time, cultivate a relationship with love. And, you know, it amazes me how many people, until life lays them down on some kind of a semi-permanent or permanent basis, in a hospital bed or what have you, people don't have time to take care of their health. They don't have time. So many people have this excuse. Well, I'm too busy. Oh, yeah, I did get that health device you were talking to me about, and I really enjoy it. But, you know, I don't have time to do that every day or twice a day or three times a day. Really? Well, if you don't have time for that, I suggest you really need to take some time and look at your life and look at your priorities and what's really important. So we're inviting Richard to make space in his life to cultivate relationship with conscious, active, present love and to make the language of that state a natural part of his speech patterns. So I've just said to Richard in the last paragraph we read yesterday, another step is to enfold yourself in that love and when possible, look in a mirror as you do. Invest time in this exercise and soon you will find conscious, active, present love will become part of your vocabulary and of your life. And when Richard at first called me, he was on his way out west to start a new life. He asked if the simpler solution might not be to just move on. After all, he thought aloud, if there's no one else to trigger the pain, life is fine. And I offer back, many think that the geographic cure is an option, but it's only a temporary solution. Yep, you can leave the person who triggers you, but remember that what was triggered is still in there. And you know, life, it's kind of like life has a secret purpose. And its secret purpose is to kick us right square in the limitation. The beauty of life is that if there's something in you that you are killing yourself with, life is going to show it to you. Now, if you live in denial, oh, it's all their fault, then you dissociate from what life is trying to show you and you blame everybody else. But at what point, when you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, you stop and go, oh my God, that's right. I've been there every time. Maybe this is mine. Maybe this is about me. So taking the geographic cure means that the energy that you had the opportunity to forgive, to remove from your structure, is now quietly resonant in your structure and creating degeneration. This is where I would offer all degenerative disease comes from. So the problem with the geographic cure is that we take ourselves and our whole reality structure with us and attract similar situations as a result. Running away does not work because the painful reality is carried within the person running. The only permanent solution is to understand and heal, is to start to get out of the desert, start to get out of the unconscious state. They talked about 40 years in the desert. Again, they weren't talking about this hot, sandy place. They were saying most people function unconsciously. They have created an unnatural condition of mind in themselves through denial and blame. They hide the parts of themselves with which they cause their pain. They generate perceptual constructs of other people being the problem, and degeneration takes over. So the only permanent solution is to understand and heal what is at the root of the reality structure causing the pain. Holding a space of love while the underlying reality surfaces is how to heal. And then the key thought that finishes out chapter 12 is the commitment on the back of this book is a major key in the healing process. It is a set of tools that show how to develop a space of love in relationships with self and others. And so I'm going to just turn to the back of the book. And if you don't happen to have a copy of the book, you can, it is out of print, so we don't have any for sale, but you can go to Amazon or eBay, and usually there are dozens of copies of it available. And or you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can download a copy free. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to make this commitment to each of you right now. And if you've got the book, if you turn to the back cover, that's where it's printed. So I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. I will do this in my thoughts, words, and actions, whether in your presence or not. In every interaction, I will look for and acknowledge the highest and best in you as I surrender to love our true nature. My connection, my source, and nurturing my relationship with you are always more important than any issue. Unlike love comes up, I will hold this in my heart and listen as I learn to speak, experience, and be responsible for my own realities. I'm here for and with you. I will keep communication open and keep love conscious, active, and present as we heal and celebrate life together. And so that's our offering from the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again Today? And the next thing we're going to do, that is tomorrow, is we're going to get into a really hot topic. We're going to talk about sin. But you know, just so you're not disappointed, we're not going to talk about it like probably any preacher you've ever heard talk about it before. Because the word sin in Aramaic simply means off the mark. It's actually an archery term. If you were an archer and you fired at the target and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper would simply yell sin, informing you that you had missed the mark that you were aiming for. When they said the wages of sin is death, they were simply telling us that the way to kill yourself is put in lots of energies that don't belong within your tissue structure. Hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, and trauma. Put as much of that in your structure, and you will die sooner rather than later, unless you happen to be one of those people who has a really awesome constitution. And there are people that can do all kinds of violation themselves, and they just rock on. It's interesting, on two different occasions, and one of the sciences I was trained in is that of iridology, which doesn't have anything to do with the ear. It may be pronounced iridology. It has to do with the study of the iris of the eye. And you can see the condition of all the organs in the body from the eye. It's like a diagnostic panel. And I've had two occasions over the years to work with a grandfather, a son, and a grandson, and look at each of their eyes. And there's a way in iridology to look at the eye and recognize what its constitution is. Just, you know, it's like this person's got a constitution of a horse. They can take anything and they'll just keep trudging forward. And then you can see by the way the fibers in the iris are formed whether that constitution is carried on through the generations. And on two different occasions, I've been able to look into grandfather's eye and see that constitution of a horse and look in the son's eye in both cases, and you can see that the constitution is falling apart, and in the grandchild's eyes, the constitution is like zip. This person will probably have some sort of degenerative disease going on by the age of 30. Grandpa, probably at 90, he'll smoke, he'll drink, he'll curse. He'll be as rotten as you want to be, and he'll rock until 90 and then fall over. Son? Now, son may be more on the side of a nice, doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, but guess what? With a constitution like he's got, probably by the time he's 55, he'll be having a heart attack. And grandson might be 6, 8, 10, 15, 20, 30 when cancer or whatever showing up, because the constitution just isn't there to handle, and that load takes its toll generationally. One of my favorite quotes from Jonas Salk is he says, the most important thing to be is a good ancestor. And a good ancestor tends to and takes care of their genes. A good ancestor functions as a true human being, functions out of love, and gives the gift of an improved constitution to the next generation rather than a degenerated constitution for the next generation. So we'll talk more about that idea tomorrow, the practical impact of engaging in energies that are off the mark and what happens. So we're excited and delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with a thought or a question for us?
No, it is all quiet on this end. So if someone presses one, we have 42 minutes.
Yay, we've got lots of time for conversation. So how can we support you? What's happening out there in your lives, in your world? Can we support you with the use of the tools, the forgiveness tool being number one? You can go to our website, whyagain.org. Up in the upper left-hand corner, there's a Start Here button Jeannie was talking about. Click it, and you will start to go through literally the end result of 40 years of intensive full-time study on the process of forgiveness. And if you don't get it the first or second or third or tenth time around, be, you know, kind to yourself with that. In order to really understand it and be able to explain the what, why, and the how of forgiveness, took me about 35 years of full-time work with it. So, you know, be gentle with yourself if it doesn't make sense at first. It is the whole process of actual forgiveness is counterintuitive. We've been brainwashed to perceive the world in a backward way. We've been brainwashed to believe that the only reason we're in pain is because somebody else did it to us. It's all their fault. And that's just a flat-out lie. You'll notice every time it's happened to you, and I don't care if it was Harry and Bill and Jane and Mary and Hortense that did it to you, you're the only one that was there every time. All of that is about you. It's what you pull in. It's what you attract. So when you realize that and you've lived in a culture and or a family system or a church system that it's all somebody else's fault, then you are living in a perceptual world that is completely and totally false and utterly backward. And so it's going to take a backward tool to correct. Now, in the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shebag or shabak. And literally translated, it means to cancel. So if I'm engaged in a conflict, you'll notice that unless you're just a generally miserable person, you're pretty happy with most everybody as long as they're doing what you want them to do, as long as they're fulfilling your goals for you. And notice the only time you're upset, apparently, with someone, and I say apparently because you've never been upset with anyone around anything. Oh, your upset has surfaced, but the reason you're upset has nothing to do with them. That just happened to be the trigger that's showing you the upset that you've been successfully hiding from yourself. That's why when people take the geographic cue, they go, what's going on here? Why are all people the same? So notice that your upset surfaces when things aren't going the way you want them to go. Why is that? That's because your perceptual system is driven by goals. And when you load a goal that causes your mind to use some form of hostility or fear to produce its construct, its perception, then the perception in that moment is going to be totally and completely a false construct. And it's driven by your goals. There's some interesting Harvard research that shows us that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, there are literally 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity happening in the brain, the max amount of data that goes into building our perception in that time frame is 9 bits of data. Now, obviously, if 10,000 units of memory are moving and we're only seeing the result of 9, something had to select which 9 bits it was going to use. Now, I'm aware there are other measurements that say there's 17 bits or 12 bits or, you know, I'm not attempting in any way, shape, or form to be absolutely literal here. All I'm saying is that out of a giant amount of data moving, out of an even far, far bigger pile of data going on in the actual world, your mind selects just a very, very small fragment of it to produce the construct of the moment. And basically what your mind does is it produces construct that will help you to survive. You know, that things that give you a payoff is what the mind provides. And the payoff has to do with the goal that you're holding. And so if you're in upset or disturbance, the core of how forgiveness works, and again, if this is the first time you've heard this, it's going to sound really stupid. But here's my offering. Don't believe it. Just try it. You'll like it. Because what will happen is you'll start to access the parts of your mind that hold all kinds of stress and pain and trauma in hiding, stress and pain and trauma that when it comes up, you put into your brain's image of everybody else, and you've never realized perhaps that you're the one who was there every time and that pain and trauma is about you. The word forgive, again, is shebag, to cancel. When you cancel the goal you hold for this person standing in front of you, or it might be for yourself, it might be for the person in the mirror. When you cancel that goal, what happens is the perception based in hostility and or fear collapses. And when it collapses in on itself. Collapses in on itself. You now have access to the root of your pain. And when you bring forward the root of your pain in the presence of love, and that's the objective here, that's how forgiveness occurs. When you bring forward the root of your pain in the presence of active love, your pain begins to dissolve. You've exposed the hidden part of your mind to active presence love, and you begin to dissolve the root of all pain. And so in any given situation, you know, I've got somebody that owes me $1,000 and I want them to pay me my $1,000. And I'm really enraged that they're not paying me. Well, no, I'm not enraged that they're not paying me. I'm just enraged. I mean, notice, I've been enraged here. I've been there, 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 there. This just happens to be another occasion. My mind serves up its rage as though my rage has got something to do with this person who didn't pay me the $1,000. Or maybe I just want this person to care for me. Well, Michael, you mean if I'm upset because this person close to me isn't caring for me, what I'm supposed to do is cancel my goal for them to care for me? Yes, that's exactly what I mean. Well, but that's stupid. Yeah, it's stupid if you believe that they're the cause of your pain. But if you want to get to the root of your pain, and remember, this took me 35 years to learn. If you want to get to the root of your pain, you cancel the goal that's driving your pain perception, and the pain perception collapses in on itself, and now you have access to the part of your mind that needs to be healed. The part that maybe has been hidden from you for 1,000 generations. And that's where restoration occurs. Miss Jenny, did I hear you making a sound like there might be somebody with a hand up there?
No. I had mine muted, but there is a hand up. So.
Well, then let's say hello to them. Hello
All
to
right,
the hand.
610. I think that it is Susan. Hi.
Hi, you guys. So,
welcome back, young lady.
Thanks. Thanks for yesterday. It helped a lot, and I watched that video, and I have just sent it to every family member in my immediate family on both sides. It's such a
Isn't
wonderful
that powerful?
Video. Yeah, it is. And I have a question about one thing that I think it was well, I can't remember his name. It's the one we hear about, the epigenetics guy, Bruce Lipton. Yeah.
Bruce,
he
yes.
He said, mm-hmm. How we change our thought patterns and these patterns that have gotten us, how we change habits that were locked in by the time we were 7, we were in receiving mode, but you can change that programming, and I know you use the worksheets to do that. He says, self-hypnosis, practice a new habit, and use energy psychology. What is that exactly?
What is energy psychology?
Yeah.
You know, I haven't gotten into studying Bruce's work. You know, we have communicated a little bit. He has read my book. But I don't know what he means by energy psychology. I know that hypnosis is not the answer. I believe that he's in error there. If you listen to the masters of old, they were all saying things like transcend, that is, as in put an end to the state of trance, get out of hypnosis, not put yourself into hypnosis. However, you can use hypnosis to put a new layer over the stinking thinking. And as long as the stinking thinking can remain in hiding, there's another level of unconsciousness that sooner or later is going to have to be dealt with. I, you know, way back 45 years ago, I was trained in hypnosis, and I used it for a time period. And my conclusion was, this is not the answer. The answer lies in accessing what's been hidden in your mind consciously, purposely, and bringing that forward in the presence of love to literally drain off, bleed off, or burn off the energy of the pain that reinforces that thought structure, whatever it is, and become freed of it. So that's the route that I chose to take after being trained in hypnosis, but then coming across the first century Aramaic forgiveness process, it's light years beyond. Although it's easier. It's kind of, to me, doing hypnosis is kind of like taking the geographic cure. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't like this, so I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to convince myself that everything is wonderful and sweet and grand and, oh, boy, isn't this fun. And I'm going to paint new layers over the old pain. And
well,
sooner or later, my take is the old pain is going to poke through.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think you're right. He says self-hypnosis, which is what you're talking about, practicing new mm-hmm. habits, which is like self-hypnosis in a way, and energy psychology, so that's the buzzer, and we don't know what that means. But I do agree with you that giving up a goal and getting an enlightened goal, finding this is a way of excavating the early stuff. And it is fantastic. So I agree with you. And one other speaker on there, if you remember, said practicing affirmations, which is like self-hypnosis again. All these people were speaking about the same dilemma. Gosh, I wish you'd been on that video. I mean, whoa. So because the
when it's time,
you have,
it'll happen.
Okay.
Yeah, I am so thankful that Yeshua knew what he was talking about.
Right. So true. So maybe I'll look up energy psychology and get back to you about it. I did send it around, though. It's just a very hopeful, hopeful video. And the fear part, the death fear part, was so wonderfully addressed there. And I'd heard Eben Alexander before and read his book, but somehow there was something about him, and this is just my garbage, but there was something about him I didn't trust. And the fact that he was on there with other people who presented in a way that I could take in, boy, preconceived notions are a killer sometimes, I guess. So it
if
helped a lot.
If they're based in hostility and fear, they sure are. Literally.
I guess they were. Yeah. So, well, on another note, I've had a report from two grand boys, and Luke, the oldest one, is his girlfriend and he have broken up, though they're still living in their apartment for another month because the lease doesn't run out, and they have a cordial relationship, but it's a little strange, he says. But he's in love with someone else, and he says it gives him so much hope and energy, but he's also very frightened that he isn't worth, you know, it, and he isn't good enough, and a lot of his old script stuff is coming out, so I've just been texting him. I missed most of Dr. Tim's radio show today because he called right at noon, and man, he goes to the top of the list. But I wanted to
I'm so glad the communication's open.
Yeah, it's wonderful, and he wants to come and visit us whether he can or not. But still, even the fact that he said he remembers being so happy here and how he could speak freely, and it's a kind of, I feel as if Tim Bingham and I are kind of an umbrella over some of the family trauma, and we have the tools. I've done worksheets with Luke before, but he's terrified that this girlfriend won't end up liking him. And he has to give up that goal, it dawned on me. Give up the goal of getting her to like you, and he will understand that. And I think he'll free him up to be his wonderful self that he really is. So,
well, my next piece of input for him would be to invite him to look at how well he likes himself. I'll offer that somebody who's drinking and drugging the way he has probably doesn't have much self-love.
Well,
and so, say again?
He's been sober for about 6 or 8 months.
That's awesome.
And he does smoke a little pot, but it's at night to help him get to sleep because he has a lot of anxiety. And he's trying to go down on a couple of meds that he's taking. He's taking two things. Lexapro and gabapentin, which I don't know what is.
Right.
But he says he has trouble sleeping and he has bad dreams, fearful dreams about it. Now they're about his girlfriend not liking him. So he has this huge goal. But yes, self-image stuff. I wonder how we could work on that using a worksheet or any of the other tools.
Well, perhaps, explaining a little bit about projection and, you know, have there ever been times, just, you know, question, has there ever been times in your life where you've not liked yourself? And is it possible that this is a projection of that? And if you can see that, then going in and repairing some of those thought disorders about self And usually those mm-hmm. thought disorders come in, you know, very early childhood with things like you're broken, there's something wrong with you, you're not good enough, you'll never be good enough, you should have been this, you know, there's a whole range of them. You might send him a copy of the physiological effects of emotional suppression. If you remember that chart, you should have a copy of it. If you don't, you can go to the website, and it's there under worksheets, the physiological effects of emotional suppression. And it lays out, you know, kind of a general picture of what most people's thought disorders are. And that might be a place for him to start to look at and go, oh, yeah, I've thought that. Well, no, I've never thought that. Oh, well, I felt that. Yes, no. And it might be a starting point for conversation. And to help him to start to not forgive himself, as people would say, for perhaps not liking himself, but literally to forgive the thought disorders that have led him to, you know, probably put himself down. You know, this is another self-put down. Oh, am I going to be good enough for her? And as he works through those things, you know, that sleep issue will probably disappear. He'll probably move into deeper rest, and he won't need pot to anesthetize himself to sleep.
Mm. I've just
you know people
that
use
good.
Yeah, people use drugs in order to anesthetize or avoid what it is inside of them they don't want to deal with. Otherwise, and I've watched people with this in the past who were drug addicts or alcoholics, and when they deal with one particular situation comes up. This goes back, probably 30 plus years ago. I had a practice in South Florida, and there was a woman who was a Mrs. Stay-at-Home housewife whose husband was a very successful businessman, Boca Raton, you know, big money type community, and he worked his 18-hour days, and she had kids at home taking care of them, and at, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock at night, he'd get home, and she'd have dinner ready, and they'd have a couple of drinks before dinner, then they'd have their bottle of wine with dinner, and then they'd have their couple of drinks after dinner. This was a 7-day-a-week routine, but they weren't alcoholics.
Yeah.
She started to do this work and chose just stop drinking, just to totally stop, which she did successfully. And she shared with me in a session, and this was, I don't remember exactly, about 5 years later, you know, she'd just not had any alcohol in 5 or 6 years. And she went mm-hmm. to a party, and someone asked her if she'd like a drink, and was like, no. Yeah, I'll have one. And somebody gave her a drink of hard liquor. She said that the actual liquid in the glass no more than got past her lips. And she said it felt like razor blades in her kidneys.
Wow.
Her kidneys are just, as the liver is, kidneys are destroyed by alcohol. You know, basically when people are, you know, end of life through from alcoholism, it's a result of pickling. And, you know, it happens to things when they pickle, they
yep.
start to break down.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. I mean, she hadn't drank the drink. It hadn't gone down her throat, but just the energy of it in her mouth. And she had done, over that 5-year period, a lot of inner work. My take would be she handled whatever her drive was that kept her using alcohol. And now, instead of feeling relief from the dissociated pain that she was feeling that drove her to quote-unquote drink, because that was out of the way, she felt the actual deleterious effects of the alcohol going into her body. Now, people don't get to feel that until they get the pain out of the way because it's experienced as relief. But once people are pain-free, they take drugs like that in, alcohol, I mean, they're going to feel how it destroys. And it spontaneously dropped. And I've seen many people over the years when they start doing their work who tried and tried and tried to quit drinking or drugging. And one day they just stop.
Whoa.
Because there's nothing
well,
to anesthetize anymore.
I hope that's not true for Lukey, but it may well be. He's doing well with not drinking, and oddly enough, Michael, he has a job as a bartender at a restaurant.
Really?
And I said,
interesting.
How can you do this? And he said, I have no temptation to drink, and I also love
good for
watching
him.
Everybody else getting happier and happier, and then they tip me really well.
So, yeah, well, there you go.
Oh, geez. Well, but he says he does need this other these other things, and he's questioning everything. So I just texted
Sweet.
Him saying, I have a tool. You know the tool. You've done it before. He writes back, what tool? And I said, the worksheet, give up the goal, basically give up the goal for Brianna to care about you. I said, it's a great goal, but you'll relax so much more if you give up that goal. And he's, well, so we're going to do a worksheet later on, I think. He's got to go to work. And he's, yeah, thanks.
That's
for the tool.
Awesome.
So nice to have him.
Well, and,
yeah.
And you might invite him to cancel every goal that he does around her. He might look at canceling the same goal for himself toward himself.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
Watch the pieces that he comes up with. And it's probably,
mm-hmm.
you know, from what you've shared about dad and home life, there's probably a lot of old energy that needs to be cleared out for him to get back to a space of, oh, yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
right. I remember who I am. I am love. I got it.
Yeah. Well,
well, that's
okay.
just
Thanks,
awesome to hear. You just, I mean, what's it been, 2.5, 3 years? You've just been hanging in there holding the space for this to open. So I acknowledge you for that and the work you've done around it. What a gift.
Yeah, well, it helps a lot. But I'm thinking about that video again, and I just, there must be a way that we can tack on a little addendum by Michael Rice. He says, you know, those other things are well and good. How about a worksheet, though? Yeah, wouldn't that be good?
Yeah. And, you know, you might even invite him. Now, this would be a turnaround. You might even invite him to support you in doing a worksheet on the issue of not liking yourself.
Okay. Okay.
I could hear the enthusiasm in your voice for that one.
No, Michael, I'm writing it down. No, I have enthusiasm. I can multitask pretty well, but writing and being enthusiastic at the same time didn't happen, but I am in that. No, that's good. Yeah. So, and
yeah, you
I'm
know,
you've,
it's an old family pattern. One that
oh,
we've
yeah.
processed many, many layers of self
mm-hmm.
put downs and such. So when
right.
you can own that with him and recognize, you know, maybe even share with him some of the family patterns of it, you know, that, you know,
oh,
share
yeah.
what you shared with the cousins that you're connecting with. And this is a family issue that we can together change the whole family dynamic.
Yeah, and boy, the cousins are going gangbusters. I forwarded the video to them, all of them. My cousin and her daughters. The daughters are the ones I've been talking to.
Right.
And the daughters told me today, I wrote them a note last night, the daughters have both been saying, you know, you have a different vocabulary. We just get paralyzed when we try to talk to each other. We're so filled with fear. But you have different words, and you're actually forming a bridge so that my mom and we can talk. And
sweet.
That's, again, because I feel as if I've got my feet. It's like the rose and the butterfly. The feet are in the ground. The roots have sunk in. And I really believe that the materials you've given us are, they work, and they will help. And also, just to say to my cousins, my younger cousins, I wanted my mom's love and attention, and I feared for her and was heartbroken for her, and I had crushes on other women for years because I wanted to be close to her. And here's other side of the family, and we never talk to each other. These daughters are doing the same thing. They are afraid for their mother, afraid of her when she gets into one of her moods, and man, how did we get to be so similar from a bloodline that split way back before? Holy, this is like a living example of the junk that goes
yeah.
down the generations. I have to take a breath.
You got it.
Okay.
No.
So, and Luke reported.
So I'm breathing with you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm sort of busting out with all this news, but Luke talked to Jacob the other day when Jacob was leaving our house and driving home and said he hadn't heard his brother sound that good in a long time. Well, that's a nice report, but there's been some backtracking and some serious hostility going on. What's that squeaking? Have you got a duck there that's quacking, Michael?
No, no ducks. Is there a
sounds
clicking?
Like a cat.
Oh, okay.
It's not
really?
My cat. My cat's nearby, but she's quiet. He's quiet. Yeah, no. It's like, ooh, ooh. Oh, well, there's a living beast in the lines, maybe. Yeah. Well, my daughter called in some distress this morning because she said her son affected his dad on her and said some really ugly things to her. And she got out of the car and walked home and said, you may not come home if you're going to speak to me that way. So he has moved entirely in with his dad, but he's left his cat with Catherine, which is like he's leaving his heart with his mother. And yet he's not comfortable with his dad. And so this is he's struggling. So just holding space for Jacob would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
He is hurting
yeah,
boy.
Sounds like he's moving into a new level, new layer for him.
Yeah. Well, I hope it's a new level and not going downward. I think downward happens sometimes.
Yeah, and notice you've been talking about all the dynamics with mothers, and here he is, interaction with mother. So that's certainly mm-hmm. hold the space for him and for his mom. Because it sounds like he brought up a lot of hurt for her.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the way the dad treated her. And now he feels he has license to do the same.
Power person dynamic doesn't fall far from the tree.
It doesn't. And he keeps saying he wants a girlfriend. And I haven't said this to him, but he's never going to have one unless she's a masochist. She'll never move in with a man who can turn on her like that. So anyway, my family's in its usual messes.
Well, you know, you're not alone, and we hold the space, and maybe this will be the motivation for Jacob to open and do another piece of his work.
Yeah, I hope so.
And
thanks,
to realize,
Michael.
You know, if you can find the space to explain the power person dynamic to him, that would probably be awesome.
Yeah, I have. I don't know how much of it sunk in. And so I'm going to do it again because that really is key here. All three boys, even the gentler, youngest one, has mistreated his mother verbally at times. So
yeah. And it needs to be – remember that the mind has a whole different BS, a whole different perceptual construct for that behavior. So – they're not going to really hear what you're saying. I mean, you can describe it perfectly. They're not going to really hear it until they break down the lie that their mind tells them about what it is they're doing to women. And then there'll be a space for them to start to understand the power person dynamic. And that's just, you know, again, it's a constitutional growth. It takes time. So we'll hold the space all the way around. Sounds like the whole family's in and moving, and you know, this is what I think Jonas Salk was talking about being a good ancestor.
I'm glad I'm still alive to be a living ancestor, just for how long it takes, I hope. Yeah.
Well, the work you've done is going to change your family system for eternity.
Yeah.
And that's the idea.
Okay. Yeah.
just
anything else on your mind?
No.
I was just
going to say.
Lisa in the chat room said that that drug that you mentioned, the gabapentin, Neurontin or whatever, is usually for nerve pain.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've heard that. My sister took that for a while back. Yeah. And so, but it is a cross drug. They use it for emotional stuff, too. He doesn't have nerve pain.
Right.
Think.
Well, we'll hold the space.
Thanks, Michael and Jeannie. I'm holding it for you guys, too, with your present situation.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we are open and appreciative of all support, and that just holding the space is definitely a big key. We've been doing more and more work around what's been happening with Dad, and you know, learning on deeper levels how to hold the space for him and support him.
Yeah, so nice.
And
he's
I'm proud
guy.
To announce that Jeannie won at Domino's instead of him this morning.
Ha ha. Good work, Jeannie.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, all right, young lady, well, any other thoughts for you?
No, thank you so much, Michael and Jeannie. Love you guys.
I appreciate you too, young lady.
I was just going to argue with you about you don't love anybody, but I'm not letting that one go. I understand what you're saying, but I think both can coexist.
Well, here, let me tell you a story. There are two cars out in the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is worth $80,000, and one of them is worth $4,000.
Yeah.
And one of them is a Mercedes, and you get to keep the Mercedes worth $80,000 if you get into it. But I know that you've never seen a Mercedes or a car before, so I'm going to have to describe it to you. And I'm going to use words. So this Mercedes is kind of like a, you know, if you were looking at a mound of dirt from a distance, it's kind of round and it's fairly short, and it goes up like a, it's like a little hill, and the wheels have initials on them. This is the way you'll know you're going to the Mercedes. The wheels have, the hubcaps have initials that go, that say VW. So now, when you go out there and you get in the Mercedes and drive away, it's yours. Now, I just gave you the exact analogy about the language of love. Which car do you suppose you're going to drive away? Never know nothing about cars, and I've just given you a description of a Volkswagen, of course, that's in the driveway, that's worth $4,000 sitting beside the $80,000 Mercedes. Which one are you going to drive away? You're going to drive one your mind understood was a Mercedes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the minute that I tell somebody that I'm going to love them, I'm going to use love as a verb, I've just described an error. And when I realize that the word describes a state of being and I understand the words accurately, then I'm going to go for the state of being. When I understand and have the correct words about the description of the two cars in the driveway, I'm going to know which one to drive away. My mind is going to know because it's got the brain cells to recognize it. But if I've got brain cells that tell me that love is something I'm going to do, I'm never going to go pick up and function as love because I don't recognize it when I see it. And I'm still working to clarify that one. So try that one on and see how it works.
Okay. I think I've gotten lost in that one. I understand what you're saying, I think, but I don't understand. I guess what I think you're saying is that if I'm holding the space of love, I won't feel this warm thing in my heart that I feel. I'm not going to give up that
warm thing.
Okay, certainly
you will. Okay,
that's the difference. I thought you were going to pop that right out of there.
Oh, no. If I'm functioning as love, I'm going to get to experience all of the impact of love in my physiology. I mean, my mind, my physiology is going to be fueled by this sweet, powerful presence, and it is going to be as far as the sensation I get, it's 1,000 times more than thinking that it's something I can do to myself or to somebody else. When I realize I need my mind to know correctly what the objective is, and the objective is to function as love, and when I do, I'm going to have this sensation throughout my whole physiology. Otherwise, the tendency will be... Go ahead.
Keep your sentence going. That's all right.
No, go ahead. I want your thought first.
You just gave me back what I thought you were taking away. I thought you were taking something away. Now I think I understand what you're saying. And I understand, too, the universality of it. But the particular hasn't been removed. Yeah. I mean, you haven't taken away what I find so wonderful about whatever it is that I feel for people I love. But you're just saying this is a universal presence. This is a state of being, not an intention or something.
Well, notice one of those people that you said you love.
Uh-huh.
And notice, remember the day that one of those people violated a really serious goal you had for them?
Uh-huh.
What happened? I mean, did you say things like, I'm so frustrated with them? I'm so angry with them?
You know, that's really interesting. That didn't happen with my children, no matter how mad I might get. That never left. But with Tim Bingham, I had thought, I'm going to throw him out forever. He's just a skunk, you know. I mean, I know what you mean.
Okay, well, we're going to erase that part of the recording. Tim, we apologize for that.
Well, you know.
And I know you're both past that.
Yeah, well, our matching bags of garbage included, you know.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, but notice then that you didn't, in that whole conversation, there was no love of Tim at any time. There was approval, and you had that warm feeling in your heart when you were approving of him because he was fulfilling all your goals. But notice what words you could use about him when he stopped fulfilling your goals. What happened to the love?
Yeah.
What happened to the warm feeling? It wasn't there in the first place. Approval was there, a thought structure that the world has taught us to call love, and we've gone off the mark. If you were truly in being, he could do anything he wanted to do, the most terrible, disgusting, disorderly, you know, things in the world, and you'd still have that presence of love in your being, in your heart.
Okay.
It would still be, it's yours.
Good. Yeah, that's very helpful. Yep.
Sweet.
That's very helpful.
All right, well, we're down to the bottom. We'll probably have another layer of this conversation again at some point as we both get clear on it. And in the meantime, everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Young lady, we appreciate you.
Bless you.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.